Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Craig, you are part of the whole Red Bull cliff diving family now, and this week they're in Inishmore off the coast of Ireland at the amazing location of Serpent's Lair. And I was looking at the videos wondering, he's not going to do that, is he? He's not crazy enough at this stage of his life to do that.
You know what? I do want to do a cliff dive. I just got to pick which venue. It's exciting. I mean, I'm here in a new role. So I've done Red Bull for judging. And now, as sports director, I'm going to be at all the stops, which is really, really exciting to be with the athletes, of course. And these beautiful locations are just incredible.
The locations are kind of insane. I think like anybody who listens to this should go and look up Serpent's Lair, because it's like a limestone floor that just has this hole in it.
Oh, definitely. I mean, look it up. And it's hard to believe that it's a natural formation, because it's a perfect rectangle. It's going to be a challenge for the divers, because it is a blowhole, so the height can vary to a meter, and that's it's like hitting a moving target.
Yeah, that's why I guess maybe if you were going to do one, it might be in Acapulco maybe, or somewhere like that, as opposed to off the west coast of Ireland, where who knows what the hell might happen.
Yeah, who knows? But it'll be exciting. And, it's just such an incredible group of talent, and, just so excited to be a part of the family. It was nice to see the world as an athlete, but when I was competing, I went to all these incredible places, but all I saw was the hotel and the pool. So now with this, I'm able to see a little bit more of the culture and experience, a lot of the, local, festivities. And so I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that, because the last time we had you on the show, you were on with Ben Johnson and Niall Quinn, and it was like that whole crossing the line. It was about athletes struggling with the immediate aftermath of their life, and it struck me afterwards that I never really just asked you, are you happy now?
Yeah, I am. I'm happy, and exploring. Exploring new ventures. I'm writing a musical, and been working with Judy Norton, who's writing the script, and Patrick Allen Casey, who's writing the music. And so, it's been an incredible adventure, that way. Also, have some other irons on the fire that, that are really quite exciting, movie, TV, and all that stuff. So, so I'm hoping something lands soon.
Are they about your own life, about your own experiences, or is it something entirely different?
It's a lot to do with my life. Yeah, the movie and the musical is definitely about my life. The TV show that we're pitching is more, kind of like what Crossing the Line is doing, how do you cope with life after, after sport, or after, something that you've achieved, that is, so much at the forefront of, the public. And, what do you do after that?
And your identity, really, was the other part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, your identity. I mean, so often, we devote so much time and energy into what we're doing, especially as athletes. And once you retire from your sport, it's like you lose that identity. And, the question is, who am I without, diving or swimming or whatever sport that you're involved in, and making that transition, and it's challenging.
Yeah, I added into all that, you had some other quite complicating factors around the time, and I guess that's why I was asking about the happiness question, because ultimately, like this week, for example, Ryan O'Callaghan came out and he played he played as a tackle for the New England Patriots and the Kansas City Chiefs. Uh-huh. And there was a real sadness to his story. Like, it ends really happily in that the Kansas City Chiefs support him and say, uh-huh. like, what the hell, you know, because he was contemplating suicide at the end of his his career. And he didn't feel at any point when he was growing up that he could be himself or...
Right.
And, like, you know, it's so sad that that still happens.
Yeah, it's such a common story. I mean, because, you know, oftentimes, you know, going to school can be very incredibly stressful, you know, and oftentimes... You know, we bury ourselves in, you know, whatever activity that we excel in, you know, whether it be academics or writing or music or sports. And, you know, and often that times that is our sanctuary. That's our salvation. But at the same time, just feeling like a fraud, you know, and, you know, if people knew and, you know, that still, you know, goes on to this day. And it's really, really unfortunate, you know, that, you know, more people, don't feel supported, and that they can be who they are, you know, they can be their authentic self and be loved and be deserving of love.
When you were making the decision to publicly tell people that you were coming out,
mm-hmm.
Was that something that you felt like you had to do?
Well, yeah, I had an odd journey with that because I was out when I went away to college and I found myself and I was in the theater department. So, you know, it was pretty easy to come out in the theater department, found other people like me and all that. So it was very accepting. But then, you know, when I got success in diving, you know, after the 84 Olympic Games, then, you know, my agents were saying, well, you know, tone the gay thing down. It's like, you know, it's almost like putting me back in the closet, you know. And so it was just my policy not to discuss my personal life with members of the media. And that's how I handled it. The bigger issue I felt was my HIV status. And that was coming forward with my HIV status because, you know, there was still that stigma surrounding HIV and a lot of the sentiment, especially, you know, with the religious right, you know, was that it was killing the right people, you know, IV drug users, prostitutes and homosexuals. And so, you know, and there was a shame with that. And so, you know, coming out at that time, I felt like I was living on an island with barely a phone for communication to the outside world because this secret. And I knew in my heart that I wasn't the only one. And the one thing that rung in my mind constantly was the truth shall set you free. And so that way nobody could hold anything over me. And so that's the reason why I did that. I had no idea the impact that would have. Especially on my book tour with thousands and thousands of people showing up for the book signings and sharing with me, you know, how I've touched their lives. Or, you know, it was just an amazing and emotional journey. And, you know, I learned that I thought I was sharing my strength. I thought I was sharing my weakness. And in fact, on book tour, I learned that by sharing my weakness, I was actually sharing my strength.
And at that point, did you get happiness? Like, was that the moment where you are kind of released from the pain and the shame when people come to your book tour and tell you that you've actually changed their lives?
Yeah, definitely. And it also made the, you know, the rather negative stuff. Like at that time in 95, Fred Phelps, Reverend Fred Phelps, would follow me all over the country at my speaking engagements. And, you know, when he would be there, I mean, it would be standing room only. It was an incredibly supportive group. And actually at one event in Lawrence, Kansas, I said, they're taking me through the bowels of the auditorium. And it's like, why are we going this way? Isn't there a more direct route? I said, oh, we don't want you to see what's going on outside. And I said, oh, I want to see, I want to see. So they took me to the third floor and we walked across and I saw his group, you know, with Die AIDS Faggot, and You'll Burn in Hell, and pictures of me with 666 on my forehead and all this stuff. And I said, oh, that's so cool, you know, and because, it was, you know, an amazing moment for me. And then during the Q&A, one of the audience members stood up and said, well, what do you think of the ignorance that's standing outside this building? And I said, well, you mean Fred? And everybody kind of chuckled. And I said, well, I feel like I should hand him a teddy bear and tell him he needs lots of hugs, because anybody who spews that much hate can't like themselves very much. And so then the LGBTQ student union sent him a bunch of teddy bears in my honor, telling him he needs lots of hugs. So I thought that was just so sweet and so wonderful.
It is pretty amazing, though, like when you consider how dangerous some of those groups are and some of those individuals.
Yeah.
Did you worry about personal safety?
You know, I did at times. I think that my friends and family were more concerned. I remember I was at an event in Atlanta, and I had a female police officer who was my escort, bodyguard, whatever, you know. And she was so sweet. She handed me a bullet, and she said, "This signifies that I will take a bullet for you." And I was like, we were both in tears and we were like hugging each other. And it was like, oh my God, you know, it just really brought that to some sort of reality of possibility.
And yet you didn't go away. I think that's kind of the heroic bit in all this. It's like you could have done your book tour and said, right, that's me done. I'm finished. I don't have to do this anymore. Yeah. But you didn't.
No. I think that the overpowering motivation was that, you know, people needed to see me and touch me and realize, oh my God, he's just a regular human being, and I can be who I am and not be ashamed.
Because just to remind everybody, like when you announce that you're HIV positive, it is still very much in the minds of the public a death sentence. People assume that you're going to die fairly soon.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why it's so important, for early testing and early treatment. Because now, I mean, studies have proven that, my T cells haven't been higher than this is the highest they've been. And my viral load is undetectable. And if you have an undetectable viral load, you're not likely to be, transmitting the virus to anyone else. So, studies have proven that with proper treatment, there shouldn't be that stigma. It's about education, to educate yourself, and be smart and love yourself enough to protect yourself and those that you're with.
That's obviously today, but to go back to 88,
we didn't know that those things back then.
No,
we were still learning. We were still trying to get medications approved, that were being, held up, through the process, with the FDA and all that stuff. So, it was really challenging. I mean, I even volunteered for some of the double blind studies, and that's an emotional roller coaster as well, because you don't know if you're on medication or not. You just have to wait and see. And, it's just such a, it's almost like they give you hope, but you don't know if the hope is actually real.
I, like through all that, you decide, okay, I'm going to go public and tell everybody everything that's happening and document it and write it all down in a book. And again, I guess that's just like to other people, that just sounds like unbelievable courage.
I don't see it as courage. I see it as just being who I am, and a part of my journey, a part of you know, who I am as a person and what type of contribution that I can have or what type of impact I can have.
Well, I've got one last question for you. I know we've got to let you go, but the
sure.
The courage, the moment underneath the water as you're bleeding and concussed.
Yeah.
Is that an impulse? Is that an instinct? Or is it actually something that you're like, okay, just calm down here and think about what you're going to do?
Well, okay. The first thing, you know, when I took off the board, I knew I was going to be close and I'm trying to get my hands out of the way of the board. Because usually you hit your hands or your arm, you know. And when I heard this big hollow thud and I went crashing in the water, I realized, oh my God, what was that? You know, and then I realized it was my head. And then my first emotion was embarrassment. I was embarrassed because here I'm at the Olympic Games. I'm supposed to be a pretty good diver and pretty good divers don't do that. And so I was trying to figure out, okay, how do I get out of this pool without anybody seeing me? But then, you know, then I realized that wasn't possible. So, you know, the other thing that kind of came shortly thereafter was, oh my God, what is my responsibility? Because I was my coach and I were the only ones who knew of my HIV status. Because had anybody known my HIV status in 88, I would not have been allowed into the country of Seoul, Korea to compete at that Olympic Games. So I was terrified by fear. And so, you know, when my coach, Ron O'Brien, came to me and said, look, you don't have to get back up on the boards again. It was kind of a knee-jerk reaction, telling him, look, we've worked too long and hard to get here, and I don't want to give up without a fight.
When you do the last dive that guarantees you gold, is it maybe 24, 48 hours later? Like, what's that emotion? Because I guess at that point you know already in your head that you're retiring.
Well, it's you know what? It's interesting because I hit my head on the three-meter springboard. I had two more dives after that, and then I came back in the finals, and I won the finals. And, you know, each dive I got stronger and stronger and stronger. And there really was no question whether I was going to win the gold medal there. We didn't know if I was going to be strong enough to dive platform. And so, you know, first workout was, a little tough in preparation for the 10-meter platform. And then it really... In the finals, it came down to the final dive. Shun Ni from China was leading by 3 points going in the last dive. And I had a higher degree of difficulty than he did. And so that was the deciding factor. I think I won by maybe 2 points. And it was so, so close. And that was such an emotional... eruption because I knew in my heart that those were my last competitive dives, you know, because I didn't think that I would be around to see the following year, really.
It is a truly remarkable story. I can't wait to see this musical.
Yeah. It's very exciting. I'm really proud of the work that Patrick and Judy and I have done.
I'm really glad you are still around to tell us all these stories, by the way. I think everybody who's listening is as well.
Greg, you're so sweet.
Greg, it's great to have you on the show again. Thanks so much. Enjoy your trip to Ireland.
Okay, thank you.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.